Naylor's Natter, just talking to teachers with Teacher Hug Radio, the soundtrack to your teaching career. This is the Teacher Hug Book Club with Naylor's Natter.
Okay, hi Yamina, and welcome to the show.
Hi.
Okay, so if you could just do, to start us off with, a little gentle introduction to you. So tell us, listeners, a little bit about you and your career to this point, and also tell us a little bit about your love for books and why you want to talk about them on the Teacher Hug Book Club.
Oh gosh, I could go on forever. So hi everyone, I'm Yamina Beebe. I'm an assistant head teacher leading the English department at Forest Gate Community School. My proudest achievement is that we won the TES Award for English Team of the Year last year. So that's one of my proudest achievements. I know you didn't ask me about that, Phil, but I wanted to tell you that. And I think that contextualizes why I love reading so much. I am an English teacher by trade. It's what I love doing. But what I've become really fascinated with is around leadership and how you lead a department, but also doing a kind of strategic elements, because I'm an assistant head teacher who essentially leads a large department of about, I think there's about 28 of us. And previous to being an assistant head teacher, leading English, I've been a lead practitioner. I'm an SSAT accredited lead prac. It was probably one of the best jobs I did, because I was also in charge of early careers teachers. So I was a professional mentor for all early careers teachers, from PGCEs to Teach First to Premier Pathway to NQTs. And I just really loved supporting and developing new kind of starters and teachers who are new to profession, because you can see the excitement in their eyes, and watching them develop and go from strength to strength is something that I love doing. I'm also really fascinated and interested in coaching. I'm actually embedding a whole school coaching program at my current school, and I did it at my previous school as well, where we've trained up about 30 plus coaches within our school, but also across our multi-academy trust. And I just think coaching is fantastic. It really is kind of beneficial in helping people elicit the brilliance within themselves. And I think that's why I love it. Don't know if I've answered your question, Phil.
No, you absolutely have answered my question. This is the reason why we asked you to come on the show. So obviously, I'm keeping a track of what kind of things you're talking about on Twitter. So I was really, really keen to have you on because of all your expertise in the area, and especially what you said at the beginning there about the enthusiasm that you've got for coaching and new entrants to the profession. So hopefully a lot of the stuff you're going to be talking about will be beneficial to new entrants to the profession, but also to everybody else as well.
So thank you.
Okay, so as listeners will know, this is the second time that we've done the Teacher Hug Book Club, and we are talking about education books. So Yamina is going to talk about three education books today, and we're going to start off with the first one. So the first one, Yamina, is tell us a little bit about your first one and how did you come across this book?
Oh, such a good book. So I should say, disclaimer, I am a Women Ed network leader. So the book I've chosen is 10% Braver by Women Ed, and it's edited by Vivian Porritt and Kezia. And it is just a brilliant book. So that's how I came across it, because I am a Women Ed network leader. And Women Ed has been really instrumental in helping me take the leap from middle to senior leadership. And it's also, I think what I love about this book and what I love about Women Ed in general is that it encourages others to do the same. It's how I knew about the book, and it's why I would recommend it to every leader. Whether you identify as a woman or not, it's a book I turn to time and time again.
Sorry, I keep pressing the wrong button. Honestly, you'd think I'd be used to this now, I know, wouldn't you? I will cut that part, don't worry. Okay, so that's your first book. So talking about that, so obviously you can use this in your leadership, you can use this across the school, across trust, like you said before. Is there anything in there that you use in terms of the book in your classroom?
I think what I love about the title is that it is just 10% braver. And I used to be quite a shy, introverted character. Nobody believes that now when I tell them, because I am quite a gobby mare. But what it's allowed me to do is be brave in my classroom, being confident in who I am. I really suffered from imposter syndrome, and I think it's something that lots of people do as well. So in the classroom, when I'm feeling a bit nervous, when I'm feeling a bit anxious about teaching a new class, I will go back to it and remind myself to be 10% braver. I love the book so much. Can you tell?
Well, absolutely, yeah. And I mean, I've been very lucky to listen to Vivian a couple of times with the conferences. So I was involved in the running of Research at Blackpool for the times that we ran that, and I've listened to Vivian speak there. And obviously, we've had her on the Nail with Natter show with Catherine Morgan as well. So yeah, absolutely. You know, we love the book. We do. So in terms of takeaways, Yamina, now, could you tell us three things that you have taken away from the book that may be useful to the Teacher Hug book club audience?
Oh gosh, three was really hard, Phil. I would say that so much of the first women-led book, the 10% Braver book, really resonates with me as a female teacher and leader in education. And it has, like, I have to say, it has impacted on my sense of self, my sense of self-worth and my confidence. That's how much of an impact this book has had on me personally. Too many takeaways, but I'm going to start with three. So, I'll only do three. Well, when I first read Sue Cowley's chapter, that opening chapter, 10% Braver, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway, Sue says that being 10% braver is about coming out of your comfort zone to take a small step, even though you find it scary. And that's absolutely kind of what I did. Particularly when I was looking into senior leadership positions, I was scared, I was terrified. And that kind of motto, 10% braver, is about acknowledging your dream, Sue says, and allowing yourself to believe that it is okay to prioritize that dream. And when I started kind of having read that chapter, it reminded me that by taking small, deliberate steps to present myself as more confident, because I talked about my lack of confidence, both as in the classroom, but also as a leader, I realized that it would help build my confidence. And she talks about this quiet inner strength, and I love that. And I think one of the things that Sue says, which really resonated with me, is that sometimes we have to just feel the fear and do it anyway. And she asks us the question, what would you do if you were just 10% braver? And I find myself returning to this chapter again and again and again when I'm feeling scared, when I'm feeling vulnerable about my own sense of self, about my own leadership, about my own practice. I'll remind myself, what would I do if I was just 10% braver? And because Sue kind of reminds me in that chapter to dream big, I should say, when I got this position as an assistant head teacher, I was part-time, it was during lockdown last year, and I didn't think I'd get it. And I had to reread that chapter to remind myself that, no, I'm dreaming big and I can do it. And I got the job. And that's just by taking small, deliberate steps to be able to do that, that's my first key takeaway, that by taking small, deliberate steps, we can present ourselves as more confident and to ask ourselves this question of what would we do if we were just 10% braver. The second kind of takeaway is, having read Samina's chapter on the experiences of female BME leaders, there's not many kind of BME female leaders in the profession who are leading at senior and kind of headship. I'm very lucky to work in a school where it's really diverse at leadership level, where my head teacher is one of the first, I think, visibly Muslim, extremely young head teacher, but it's phenomenal. And reading this chapter, it helped me see the barriers that women like me face, that it's not just me on my own, but there are others who are affected by these issues just like me. And actually what it did is it made me feel seen. And what it did is it also enthused me to drill through that concrete ceiling, as Samina describes it, because we talk about shattering the glass ceiling. But what Samina says is that for women of colour, for women who identify, who are black or minority ethnic, there's a concrete ceiling that is really difficult to drill through. And Samina talks about the importance of mentors and coaches for BME women who then become quite pivotal in our lives. And I found that because I've had a number of women who've been my mentor and coaches. Bookie Youssef is one, Hannah Wilson is another. I've been really blessed, I talk about them. And Vivian as well, who have been my mentors and coaches in supporting me to feel empowered and encouraged. And that's what the book talks about. To go for those top jobs, why not? Why can't we as black and ethnic minority women go for those top jobs? And she argues that through coaching and mentoring, we can feel empowered and encouraged to think differently. And what I love about that chapter is that Samina suggests some strategies for organisations as well to look at how they can increase leadership diversity. And at the end of the chapter, she talks about how, you know, we really need to think about our recruitment and selection strategies so that we are actively seeking to increase the number of BME applicants. And one of the strategies she mentioned, which I love, is actually including kind of an organization's commitment to diverse leadership in job adverts. I love that. And then the third takeaway, which I've come to time and again, every time I've tried to negotiate pay, is really thinking about the gender pay gap and Vivian's chapter on the gender pay gap. And what I love about that chapter is when I got the job as a teacher, I was really nervous about asking to negotiate pay with my head teacher, who's also a really good friend of mine. And it was really awkward. And I remember messaging Vivian and she said, go to my chapter. And so I reread Vivian's chapter because it gave me real practical strategies on negotiating pay. And it actually worked. It was brilliant. And because I had almost like the script based on Vivian's chapter in the book, I was able to just like work through the script in my head. And, you know, the key thing that I want to say about this book is that it's had such a significant impact on my career and my confidence. And every time I'm feeling a certain way, I'll go to this book. I literally will open up 10% Braver and go, right, what chapter can I read now to make me feel, to remind me of my sense of self-worth? And I've been really blessed, I guess, to discover the Women Ed Network, because I would never have kind of read this book otherwise, I don't think. And so the Women Ed Network and 10% Braver book has been instrumental in my career and my sense of kind of confidence as well.
Fantastic. Yeah, I can absolutely agree with that. And not that it's about sharing personal reflections on here, but obviously, you know, I am talking about books. So, I mean, I can entirely sort of echo what you're saying when I've got a particular book. So Jill Berry's Making the Leap, I've talked about a huge amount, because I spent 10 years being assistant head teacher, as I have mentioned many times on the podcast. And it was through talking to Jill and through reading that book. And when you said, you mean that you go back to Vivian's chapter and you go back to the other chapters in there, you know, you can see how a book can be really, really instrumental. You don't just read it through once, but you go back to it for reference time and time again. It does have a marked influence on your career, and you can clearly hear that in what you're talking about there. So in terms of where we can find this book, so if listeners are thinking, right, well, that sounds like something that I would really be interested in, where can listeners find more about the book and maybe about Women Ed as a network?
So I would definitely go on Twitter and follow us at Women Ed. I'm also a network leader at Women Ed London. There's lots and lots and lots of us out there looking to welcome you. You can also go directly to Sage Publishing website to find a copy of the book too.
This is the Teacher Hug Book Club with Naylor's Natter. Join in the conversation on hashtag Teacher Hug Radio or call the show on 0800 246 1555.
Brilliant.
Join us.
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of the second of your choices now, so if you can tell us a little bit about that. So the second book, what is it and how did you come across it?
So the second book is by just phenomenal leader, Diana Asagi, and it's called Courageous Leadership. And I should say, a few years ago, I was a participant on Diana Asagi's Courageous Leadership course, which is was specifically designed for Black and ethnic minority women looking to move move into leadership. Honestly, I talk about these books. The reason I'm so passionate about this one is because it changed my life. Meeting Diana Asagi, meeting all those other amazing women on the course led me to find this book, obviously. And I should say that when I was on that course, there was this moment of revelation about myself and what I could actually achieve. I should just tell you. So there was this experience where we had to climb a rock face, and I am scared of heights. I'm 4 foot nothing. I'm tiny. I'm scared of everything pretty much, but I'm really scared of height. I'm terrified of heights. And we were expected to climb this rock face. And I had all these amazing women, including Diana Asagi, kind of surrounding me, encouraging me to climb that rock face. And there was some people at the bottom, there's some amazing women at the top. And I just came to the realization when I climbed the rock face that I could do anything that I wanted to, that I was more courageous than I thought. And so when Diana Asagi kind of, I went on Diana's Twitter page and I saw that she was publishing this book, I was so excited because I thought, oh yes, you know, because when that course ended, I felt a bit, I was grieving the loss of it because it had been so, such a life-changing course that I just grabbed it. I didn't even look at the biography or anything. I just quickly went, right, I need to grab that. And I was so eager to get my hands on it, to continue learning from, I would call Diana Asagi a master of words. So,
okay, so just tell us a little bit about how you use that book then in your classroom.
I think what I love about this book is specifically about leadership. So it's not just about the way in which I use it. It's also about the way in which others use it. So one of the things I did is I actually gifted this book to all the middle leaders in my team because I just thought it was so instrumental in the way in which we think about the work that we're doing. You know, we're a large English department. What I love about this is that it applies to whether you're a leader in the classroom or you're a leader, like a whole school leader, because it talks about feeling the fear and doing it anyway, just like Sue Cowley does in 10% Braver. But there's just so much about how we are humans first. And it's there's this brilliant chapter which I'll talk about later, but about how I'm a human first and I'm a leader second. And in the classroom, I do have to remind myself of that, that I'm a human first. And it's the way in which I build rapport and relationships with my students to remind myself of my own vulnerability as much as of my students, and kind of the importance of building relationships with young people in order to help them thrive in the classroom.
Completely, completely. So, I mean, you explained really well in the first book about how you'd gone about the three big takeaways. So what were your three big takeaways from this one?
Oh, so many. Gosh. So each chapter, I should say, is focused on a different statement. Diana kind of has these seven statements. She outlines these seven statements of courageous leadership at the beginning of the book. And each chapter is focused on each of these statements. And boy, does every chapter pack a punch. Each chapter is focused around kind of personal stories, I would say, from Diana's career as a leader. And that's why I think I love it so much, because it feels so personal, but it also feels very much like a leadership book that anyone can kind of pick up and read and apply to them their selves. And it's really key kind of learning from Diana's experiences. So the first takeaway, similar to Sue Cowley's statement, to feel the fear and do it anyway, Diana gives us advice on how we can limit the influence that fear has on our thoughts and actions. And one piece of advice is to, she says, admit it, to admit the fear, to share the fear and deal with anything that scares us and causes us to feel fear. And Diana tells us to kind of, in that chapter, deal with our internal fears, because in doing so, we will lead without limitations. And I've applied that both in the classroom, but also as an assistant head teacher. Because I am very much a kind of, and I, anybody who knows this about me, I'm very much about servant leadership, but also I like making people happy. I like people being happy, and I know that about myself. And sometimes that causes me fear. And I do have to return to that chapter to remind myself that these are just internal fears. And that by dealing with those, by sharing them with others, that I can then continue to lead without limitations. The second takeaway is that in the third chapter, Diana reminds us that we can work on our own, we can work through others, and we can work with others, like love it. So she says, you know, I'm, again, one of those people who finds delegating tasks quite challenging, and actually what this chapter did is it helped me to think about delegation in leadership differently. And I actually now ask myself regularly, as Diana does in the book, are you working on your own because that is what is expected? Or is it because it's the best method for this task? Because I will find myself just doing something, but actually, how far is this productive? And am I just working on my own because I think that's what everyone expects me to do as an assistant head teacher and a head of department? Or am I doing it because it's the best method of working? And in it, you know, this chapter, she reiterates that when working through others, everything is possible. And I've been really applying that in my new role. And I've seen the kind of possibilities. And the possibilities are endless when you're collaborating, you're working through others. And I love that term, working through others. That I don't have to do everything by myself. I can give other people and I can pass tasks onto others as long as I provide high challenge and high support. That's really important in empowering and liberating others to be the best version of themselves. And Diana says that we let others show they are strong by stepping back as leaders and letting others' light shine. Just love that. I love that. And then the third takeaway is in another chapter, as I mentioned earlier, Diana states that I am a human first and a leader second. And it says, I remember the importance of family, love, compassion, and grace. And this chapter really resonated with me as I'm a really family orientated person. But I'm not going to lie, kind of amongst the pandemic. And also before that, I am somebody who immerses myself in work. And I sometimes forget that about myself, that I am actually driven by my family. I am actually somebody who at the heart of my life, and my career is my family. That's where my values come from. And so when I do kind of find myself moving away from that, I do return to this chapter to remind myself that compassion and vulnerability in leadership is not a weakness. And I worry about that because I am somebody who's quite passionate. I'm not going to use the word emotional because Vivian Porritt will tell me off. So I'm going to use the word passionate. I'm very passionate, and I do wear my heart on my sleeves. But where I've seen in the past, where I've seen compassion and vulnerability within myself as being a weakness, I don't anymore. I see it as a strength. And that's what Diana says, that it's actually a strength of ours to lead with compassion and to show our vulnerability. And as Brené Brown says, and I won't talk about that because I love that book too, but you can't get to courage without rumbling with vulnerability. And I love that. And Diana tells us that the first type of leader we are is a human one. And the thing is, as humans, we love, we cry, we hope, we withstand adversity. And to quote, you know, Diana, we celebrate with others. And really and truly, we want the best for those around us. And that is a part of being a human. And I do have to keep reminding myself of this when I'm worrying that I'm being too, inverted commas, emotional. And when that kind of word pops into my head, and I have to remind myself, emotions aren't weakness. They're part of being human. And that vulnerability in leadership is a strength, not a weakness.
Definitely. And I didn't necessarily know what books you were going to choose today, Yamina, but in terms of signposting listeners to other things, so our SLT actually listened to Diana talk at the New Ed conference. So we actually had some discussions around the table around that inspirational presentation that she put forward on that day as well. So that's as we record this a couple of Saturdays ago. So, you know, really, really recommend that. And in terms of people that haven't maybe come across Diana's work or haven't read the book, could you just signpost listeners to where they can find that and maybe, well, what they can do with that when they do?
You can find it on www.courageousleadership.co.uk, but I'm not going to lie, I did buy my copy off Amazon. I can't lie. I had to get my hands on it straight away. I was like, I need it right now.
Well, this is it. I always try to signpost to the local independent bookstore. We always end up with Amazon in the end, don't we? And just, you know, just for full disclosure, neither of us are on any kind of commission for anybody to do this. Okay, so I can't believe it's already time for the third recommendation. So tell us a little bit, Yamina, about your third book and how you came across this one.
So the third book is by Andy Tharby. It's called Making Every English Lesson Count. I should say there are different versions of this. So there's one that's kind of not subject specific called Making Every Lesson Count. And then there's more subject specific versions of this series. And I saw it on Twitter. I follow Andy Tharby like he's a god. He's phenomenal. He's a brilliant English teacher. And so when I saw this book kind of come out, I've got the Making Every Lesson Count, which is brilliant. It's based on the same principles. But obviously, as an English teacher, I wanted to kind of look at the way in which those principles could be applied in my English classroom and for my team of English teachers as well. And so, yeah, I came across it through via Andy Tharby's Twitter and Sean Allison's Twitter as well, I should say.
These recommendations are just, you know, they just chime in so well with what kind of things that maybe I've been reading. So I have had the pleasure of meeting these two gentlemen a few times because they're part of the Durrington, the research school down there. So when I was involved in the run of the Blackpool Research School, you know, we stood in awe at what they were achieving already as we were kind of a fledgling new research school at the time. So what a fantastic choice. So this is a really, really practical book, isn't it, in terms of your subject. Yeah. So tell us listeners a little bit about how you would go about using this in your classroom.
Oh, goodness me. I think this is combining my key takeaways, essentially. But what I mean, I have to tell you that I love this book so much that when I was the professional mentor and the induction mentor for all the early careers teachers, I actually gifted them all a subject-specific copy where there was a subject-specific copy, because I genuinely think it is brilliant in terms of application in the classroom. It's just really practical strategies for your subject, whatever your subject is, to be able to apply directly into the classroom. And actually, I wouldn't say they're non-negotiables. I think they call them principles, expert kind of teaching principles that you can apply whatever your subject is. And I think the key thing is, like, I've been teaching for now 11 years, but I go back to it time and time and time again because it's just so damn good. Am I allowed to use that word? It's so good. Because it's so applicable to whoever you are, whatever your experience, however long you've been teaching, you know, anyone can pick this book up and apply it. And actually, this is one of the things that somebody who's been teaching a lot longer than I have, when I gifted them this book, and I get gifted every English lesson counts to all my English team. Again, I'm a bit obsessed with buying people books. Sorry.
This is the Teacher Hug Book Club with Naylor's Natter.
Naylor's Natter, just talking to teachers.
I'm not rich, I promise. It's just I just think the gift of a book is just a dream. And so one of our experienced teachers, has been teaching a lot longer than I have, said, "Yamina, I love this book because I can apply it to, you know, students who are, you know, who have English as an additional language, all the way to students who, you know, are aiming for that grade 9. And I think that's the power of this book, that it is just so, you know, practical for any teacher of whatever experience and whatever subject, I should say. I know this one is specific to English, but whatever subject as well, any subject.
Yeah, I mean, and the gifting of books, that's a whole other topic, isn't it? And I'm exactly like you. I'm often carrying around a bag. And in fact, you know, thanks to the benefits of doing a podcast and these kind of shows, you know, I do get sent a lot of books and I do read a lot of books. And, you know, our staff CPD library at school is very well stocked with the latest offerings. But I mean, it's that physical process of actually going and handing it to somebody when you've been talking about something. So, you know, I mean, I was having a conversation with a new entrant to the profession last week who was looking at, you know, behaviour, for example. So, of course, you know, I took him When the Adults Change, and Paul's book and other books, you know, are available as well. So that power of sharing. And like you said before, you know, people who've shared books with you and the impact they've had on your career, I think it's a really powerful thing to do.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, sorry, go on.
I was going to say, I hope they don't think I'm mad, but I agree with you completely.
Listen, the Teacher Hug Book Club audience will be absolutely in agreement. We're all about the books, aren't we? Definitely. So in terms of the takeaways this time, so you've kind of gone on to talk a little bit about how you use it in the classroom, but tell us the big three takeaways from this book.
So I'm going to outline, I think what I love about it is that, as I've said before, there's these kind of key principles that Andy Tharby outlines. And he talks about, you know, what does expert teaching require? One of them is challenge and how we challenge our students. Explanation, so that students acquire these kind of new knowledge and skills. And I love that that's the way he structures it as well. So he says things like modelling, and it says so that, so you know the exact impact of that particular method, so that students know how to apply knowledge and skills, and then questioning, so that students are made to think hard with breadth, depth and accuracy, and then feedback, so that students think about and further develop their knowledge and skills. And I think, again, those, the reason I think that's a key takeaway is because regardless of what your subject is, you can apply that. We all think about teaching. If we all think about teaching in that kind of specific way, I think it will make, actually, it makes planning lessons and delivering lessons a lot easier, and it's just streamlined. Think about your challenge, what expectation, how do we have high expectations of students, how do we create, you know, model that for our students, how are we explaining kind of and breaking down key concepts and new skills and knowledge, how do we then model it so that our students know what success looks like, what kind of questioning strategies are we using to check students' understanding, but also to then help them keep thinking deeper and harder, and then what feedback are we providing for students so that they know what they need to do to continue developing those skills and key skills and knowledge. So I think that's my first takeaway about that expert teaching, what it looks like in both the English classroom but in any other subject as well. The second takeaway, there's just these brilliant chapters in Andy Tharby's book, Making Every English Lesson Count. And he really breaks down the kind of key skills and essentially the curriculum, which is around reading and writing and also speaking and listening. But my second key takeaway is about challenging reading. And it's from the chapter Challenging Reading, and it's about prioritizing vocabulary. And I've written a lot about prioritizing vocabulary, but I actually was inspired through this book. And Andy Tharby kind of reminds us of the importance of vocabulary and prioritizing vocabulary when we are supporting students in developing their reading habit and their reading skills. And for example, you know, Tharby suggests that creating vocabulary lists for new units of work each time and introducing students to those words step by step in each lesson is really powerful. And actually, having gone back to that chapter, it's exactly what we've done as a department. So at Forest Gate Community School and Team English, we've actually outlined, and I have to give a shout out to my team, Iman Mahmoud and Ray Mead, kind of went away and created these vocabulary lists for every single unit of work from year 7 to 11. And actually, we've applied this strategy and we can see it working so, so well. And part of our multiple choice questions that we kind of are creating for homework is also about checking students' understanding, whether they can apply those, you know, if we give them a non-example of a specific word, can they say that's a non-example? And we've been really focusing on Becquetel's kind of vocabulary instruction, but also Alex Quigley's. And that all comes from kind of Andy Tharby's book. He mentions it in the book as well. So we were really inspired by that suggestion as well. The second strategy is, and this again, this is just something that seems quite basic, but it's just been so powerful in my classroom. And it's about modelling and how we model kind of those key skills of quotation analysis. It's something that I've always struggled with. It's something that I'm always constantly trying to work on, despite my kind of, 11 years of teaching. It's something still that I really want to work on constantly. And what Tharby talks about is that we can ask questions. So we can have, for example, he talks about modelling, but modelling quotation analysis. So how we break that down and how we use metacognition and those strategies to really get students to think like, I guess, analytical readers. And he essentially gives this strategy, which I use all the time now, where you have a quotation and then you kind of do the hard work for the students. So you underline the key words that you want them to be able to analyze, you want them to be able to talk about in their essays, and then you ask these questions that are specific to those words. So before, all I used to do is have a quotation and then go, right, here's a step success. You know, identify the techniques, identify the keywords. But that's leaving the students do it by themselves. Whereas in this, what Andy Tharby suggests is really breaking those key skills down. So what word type is this word? You know, why? What does this word mean? What does this make you feel, imagine, think? What does it tell us about the Victorian era, for example? And so by having those questions around the quotation, what Tharby does is he makes the implicit for students explicit. And honestly, it's something that I use all the time now. And it was, when I read the book, it was revolutionary, and it might not be revolutionary for people now, but I read this, you know, book, as I said, the minute it came out, and it just really changed the way in which I did things in my classroom. And I think it's revolutionary in the way others can do things in their English classroom or any other subject as well. And the third, oh, there's so many, but sorry, Phil, can I go on with one more?
What do you mean? Can you go on? Please, please go on. Definitely.
Sorry. I just love this book so much because I do still, and it's so funny that when you asked me about this, I was thinking about which books have really become such a part of my embedded practice. Things that, you know, when you just start doing things that you don't even remember where it came from. And actually, like, I remember now that it came from this. So in his chapter, Challenging Writing, Andy Tharby tells us to go Greek. And he talks about the kind of simplest methods of encouraging teenagers to write with genuine flair. And one of the things that he shares in this book is like these kind of Greek terms, I guess, and the way in which we can teach it explicitly so that our students start to master knowing what they are and then using them as well. So, for example, he talks about anaphora, and then he gives examples, he gives a description, and there's an actual table here where he gives a description of the technique, but also examples so that we can share them with our students. And at the end of that chapter, he asks us these reflective questions. Do you immerse your students in the topic they will write about as well as in the generic features of good writing? And before that, all I was doing was just going, okay, you know, when you're writing to persuade, these are the techniques you need. But I wasn't always developing students' cultural capital around persuasive writing. I wasn't always introducing students to actual real life articles that try to persuade. And so I've really started to implement, there are other newspapers out there, but the Guardian comment is, you know, the comment is free opinion kind of articles. And they've become quite instrumental in getting the students to become immersed in that topic and really kind of take it apart, I guess, and identifying those go Greek, as he says, those kind of Greek, what would you call them? Strategies. He talks about kind of rhetorical devices to get them to really be able to then apply in their own kind of writing as well. He also asks the question of, are your students developing the habit of emulating the stylistic features of great writing? Well, if I'm not showing the students what great writing looks like, how can I ask the students to emulate that? And so again, that's just become such a part of my classroom, to show students real life examples of fantastic pieces of writing, in order to be able to then, for students then to be able to use those strategies themselves.
Right, Yamina, this has been an absolute pleasure to speak to you. Now, I'm going to put this out there that obviously, you know, you have such knowledge on all of these books and such knowledge in terms of the books that are coming up. I really think that not only should you be a guest on the Teacher Hug Book Club, but I really think you should be presenting one of the episodes. So I'm going to tentatively put this forward for a suggestion, and I'm sure that the audience would agree with this, that you could definitely be doing this next week, maybe on the team as well.
Oh God, that's scary. I'd well, take it, wouldn't I? That's the problem.
No, but this has been absolutely brilliant. Right, so again, really, really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Phil, for having me. It's been so much fun.
Nailers, Natter, just talking to teachers.
This is the Teacher Hug Book Club with Naylor's Natter.
Okay, so hello everybody and welcome to the Teacher Hug Book Club, and I'm joined by Hannah Marston. So Hannah is the commissioning editor at Bloomsbury Education, and she is hopefully going to be, as we move forward, a regular contributor to the Teacher Hug Book Club. And she is joined by two of Bloomsbury's authors, so I'm going to let her introduce them to you now, and we're going to have a conversation about two of these books. So Hannah, delighted that you could join us today. Welcome.
Thanks so much, Phil. That was such a lovely introduction. And yeah, I'm super excited to be part of the Teacher Hug Radio Book Club. So I thought I'd start by telling you a little bit more about Bloomsbury as a kind of overall introduction. And then I'll introduce you to our lovely authors who are joining us today. So Bloomsbury Education is an imprint of Bloomsbury Publishing, and Bloomsbury is probably best known for publishing the Harry Potter books, but we also have a thriving education list, and we publish a whole range of books for teachers and school leaders working through the age ranges, and that's from early years to primary, secondary, and right up to further education. So we publish professional development books, and we have a whole range of authors writing books covering a whole range of topics from lesson planning to feedback, behaviour, teacher and pupil wellbeing, and lots of subject-specific books as well. We have some brilliant authors, for example, Ross Morrison McGill. We've actually just published a new edition of his bestseller, Mark Plan Teach. So it's really worth checking that out if you haven't already. As well as the professional development titles, we also publish a large range of teaching resource books. These cover subjects from maths to English to science, of course, and to PSHE. And a lot of these books are photocopyable, so they will save you hours of lesson planning time in these subjects. And it's really worth taking a look at these. And this is the list that Si and Andrew, who we'll be speaking to in just a moment, are publishing into, so you'll get a bit more of an insight from them about this list too. And last but by no means least, we also publish at Bloomsbury Education a large selection of educational fiction and poetry. We have book-banded readers and young readers, high-low fiction, historical fiction, and poetry anthologies. And these are written with some really exciting voices, for example, Patrice Lawrence, Sarah Crossan, Chitra Sounder, and Joshua Siegel writes poetry anthologies. So if you're looking for books for your class library, this really is a perfect place to start. And this spring, we have some really exciting new titles coming out. I just wanted to mention a few, and then we'll talk specifically about two very exciting books with the author guests we have on today. So to look out for in March, we have Stepping into Senior Leadership by the brilliant John Tate. And I'd really recommend this book for anyone looking to step up from a middle leadership role to a senior leadership role. And John has a real knack of talking you through everything in such a clear and reassuring way. And he talks with a wealth of experience as a school leader in Middlesbrough. In April, it's definitely worth having a look at Proactive Pastoral Care by Maria O'Neill, if that's an area you're interested in. You might know Maria as the founder of Pastoral Support UK and UK Pastoral Chat. And Maria has written a brilliant book about making sure pastoral care is not just reactive, but proactive. So it develops a supportive learning environment that prioritises pupil wellbeing and mental health. And also in April, we have some resource books for Key Stage 1 and Key Stage 2 from the Grammarsaurus authors. They are the team behind the Grammarsaurus website that some primary teachers might already be using. So this is these books are a great toolkit for teaching writing, spelling, punctuation and grammar. So yeah, these will save you a lot of time if you're looking for something in that area for Key Stage 1 or Key Stage 2. So you can find out lots more about our books and order them directly from our website at bloomsbury.com/education, or you can follow us on Twitter at Bloomsbury Ed, where we're always chatting books. And yeah, it'd be great to hear from you on those channels. So without further ado, I would like to introduce the first guest that I have on today, and that is the amazing Andrew Jennings. Andrew is the brilliant creator of the Vocabulary Ninja brand, and I'm sure teachers listening up and down the country will already know his work and be using his books and resources in the classroom. Andrew is also a teacher and the father of twins, and we are very, very proud and excited to have published many books by Andrew already. And he has another one coming out in April of this year. So I'm going to pass over to Andrew now to tell you a little bit more about his ninja brand and have a chat with him about Write Like a Ninja, which is out in April. So welcome, Andrew.
Thanks, Anna. And thanks, Phil, for having me on. It's a privilege to be asked to come on board and speak about not only my books, but it was interesting that you, Hannah, you introduced or mentioned about Mitch from Grammarsaurus and John Tate, who I've been lucky enough to work with in some of his schools over the past year. And I definitely echo what you said both about John's stepping into senior leadership books, which are fantastic. And as well, I know I've sort of at the very, very initial stages sort of spoke to Mitch about his up-and-coming Grammarsaurus books, which I know are going to be fantastic for supporting literacy in Key Stage 1 and Key Stage 2. So it's really exciting to sort of see those books coming out as well, as you said, as my Write Like a Ninja book, which is going to be coming out, I think it's on April the 1st, actually, which is really, really exciting for me. It's a bit of a funny story with the Write Like a Ninja book, because I feel like it's always weird to sort of hear people sort of give Vocabulary Ninja the sort of the plaudits that it gets when it sort of really, in terms of the brand, it did sort of just grow out of chance, really, and starting to blog and talk to people on edgy Twitter. And it just seemed to sort of grow out of that. It wasn't anything that I initially intended to do, but has been, you know, massively well received. And obviously the Vocabulary Ninja book, that my first publication, is now sort of has just reached that sort of age of being sort of 2-year-old since being published. So it's nice to see that, you know, that's still a really valued publication for lots of teachers, both experienced and people entering the profession at the moment. But yeah, the Write Like a Ninja book was a bit, again, I suppose a little bit like a lot of the content that I produce, I hadn't necessarily planned to do it. In lockdown last year, the first lockdown, I just, obviously everybody had lots of spare time on their hands, and I was in and out of school as part of a senior leadership team. And in some of the spare time, I just started writing and developing a bit of a book that very, very quickly grew into something that I thought would be really valuable in terms of it eventually being named Write Like a Ninja, which is, as with a lot of my content, a little bit cheesy or engaging, I suppose, for the children. But the whole concept of the book is thinking about how we can, obviously, first and foremost, improve writing outcomes for pupils, but also, more importantly, to really build that confidence for writing. I've been doing a lot of work this week just trying to sort of really focus on what my identity is as a teacher and as a brand. And it is very much about supporting all pupils, but really trying to develop that. I know mastery is a term that's used a lot in schools, but really trying to develop that mastery of the foundations in all subjects. So whether it be reading, whether it be writing, vocabulary, and even numeracy and grammar to a certain extent. You know, from my experience as a teacher over the last 10 years and a senior leader, there's always that group of children that no matter what year group we seem to teach in, that come through, and we still, as teachers, sort of find it difficult to think, well, how have they got to this point without knowing some of these basics, or that they find certain things, you know, like writing or whether it be reading simple text, really, really challenging. So I think Vocabulary Ninja as a brand, and all of the books that I've produced, including the Comprehension Ninja books that have been, you know, really well received by teachers, are all about just developing that confidence for pupils and developing that I'm starting to call it that sort of mastery of the basic skills. So before we go on to that genuine mastery of a subject, you know, that I know is talked about a lot in maths or numeracy, it's really starting to develop those strong foundations in all subject areas. So with, you know, primarily the Comprehension Ninja books, you know, that the foremost skill that it's developing is pupils' ability to retrieve information accurately and at speed whilst holding that understanding. And that's crucial for me that they, that a child can do that efficiently and effectively before that they can then go on to answer more complex questions that are built around inference and summarizing and predictions or whatever it may be. For me, retrieval is the foundation of that. And, you know, the Write Like a Ninja book is there now to support pupils in doing that. This is the first book that I've produced that is very much pupil facing. I think that the Vocabulary Ninja books and Comprehension Ninja have all been very much, you know, to support teachers deliver lessons, effective interventions, to embed them within schemes in school that are already withstanding, which has been, you know, very important. But this book in particular is aimed at being able to put one in front of every single pupil and to do away with the need for the endless reference of photocopyable sheets, et cetera, and so on, and some of the difficulties as well around understanding the grammatical terminologies and so on. This book is very much designed to be put in the hands of pupils and teachers so that it's that sort of one-stop reference point for writing within any subject of the curriculum. So in my mind, the big vision is you would walk into a classroom and the Write Like a Ninja book would be a mainstay of sort of any pupil's desk, whether they're working in science. I know, Phil, you talked about, you know, that being a passion of yours to us before the podcast. But, you know, within a science lesson where there's some report writing to be done, whatever it may be, that the Write Like a Ninja book with all of the content, the reference content that's sat within it, that book would support a child within their scientific writing. It would support a child within their creative writing in a literacy lesson. It would support a child developing a realistic first-person report or information text in history or geography. So I like to think of it as a really comprehensive resource that's going to be very adaptable and usable in school across a multitude of subjects. You know, I don't see any point in developing a book that's going to sit on a shelf for long periods of time or in trays. This is a book that, as I've said, is very much designed to be pupil facing. And from some of the feedback that we've had initially about it from, you know, published or, you know, Piers Tordy, one of them, a name that I'll throw in, I think he spoke to me after he'd seen it and said, as a child, and obviously Piers is, you know, a famous author now with some fantastic books, he said he would have lapped up Write Like a Ninja when he was a child because of everything that it contains. And I think pandemic-wise as well, you know, when you scroll through Facebook, you know, there's a lot of parents who's, you know, the classic is the fronted adverbials, what's a front, you know, and everything else that comes with grammar. This book is very much designed to support parents and support pupils at home as long as that lasts. So, yeah, really excited to see it published, and I'm looking forward to see what everybody's response is from the book.
Thanks, Andrew. And that is so, so true, everything that you've just said there in terms of this is not going to be a book, if the rest of your other 13 books are anything to go by, that is going to spend any time on any shelves. This is going to be used regularly. And for listeners, I just shared a story with Andrew before we came on air and just talked a little bit about how much use his books get in my house. So at the time of recording this, I've got two extremely excited children in their bedroom, knowing that I'm actually speaking to Andrew tonight, or, you know, the ninja man, as they all refer to him. And also, it was really interesting, he said there that not only you can use these as a teacher, but you can use these with your own children, but also, and the fronted adverbials is a classic case of this, you know, even though I've been teaching for Czechs Watch, you know, 21 years, this has really, really helped me, I've got to be honest, because the focus of the curriculum and the way that things are taught has changed so much over the time that perhaps, you know, I've been teaching rather than education. So I think it's really, really practical. So it's going to be a fantastic book. And just a thank you from me as well about Vocabulary Ninja and getting me through, let alone, you know, child one and child two. Andrew.
Yeah, thanks for that, Phil. And just one thing to say is you know, it's very much designed to support children. One thing that I hadn't forgotten to say, but one of the best things about the book is that I've managed to convince Alan Pete to come on board with his amazing sentences, and they're with embedded within the books as or the book as well. And I know in talking to Alan about what that might have looked like in the book to support pupils. You know, when we talk about writing and writing being this creative process for pupils to really get into, I know Alan, when I've talked to him about his exciting sentences, he was always a bit dismayed at how the way writing outcomes are now judged, etc., that his exciting sentences were used in a certain way to get, you know, the subordinate and conjunction in or whatever it may have been, regardless of how really the child used it. I know he's really excited for his sentences to be involved in the book to support children develop that sort of flair for writing as how he'd sort of originally intended them to be used. So I know there's lots of schools that use Alan's exciting sentences in lots of different varieties of ways. So yeah, just as a little point, just to finish on from me, it's just, you know, it's really exciting to have Alan as sort of a contributor to the books. And I know that it'll add so much value for schools as well.
It absolutely will. Thank you, Andrew. So Hannah, we're going to hand back over to you for our next book. So back over to you, Hannah.
Thank you. And just to echo Andrew, thank you so much. It's so fascinating to listen to you talk about this. And yeah, this is not a book that's going to spend any time at all on the shelf. It's going to be used. It's going to be a living, breathing book in the classroom. And I think kids are going to love it. I mean, it just looks fantastic as well. It's just something that you just want to pick up and have a look through and use every day. So yeah, it's going to be a brilliant book. And yeah, we're excited to be publishing it on the 1st of April.
This is the Teacher Hug Book Club with Naylor's Natter. Naylor's Natter, just talking to teachers with Teacher Hug Radio, the soundtrack to your teaching career.